You're listening to From the Bullet to the Bible with Philip Hall and Tim Lowry. Join us today as we take you on a journey through the life and testimony of ex-mobster Philip Hall. The studio lines are now open. You can text your questions to 936-337-5700. That's 936-337-5700. Our hope is that through this program, you'll see that God wants to be a real part of your life, and that no matter who you are or what you've done, Jesus still loves you. Now, here's your host, Tim Lowry.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. We are excited to have you here in the studio, Mr. Philip, another week.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Tim?
So tell me what's going on.
Man, I think we had a radio show before we got the radio show. We had some really great conversation, man. I just love how the Lord's working. I mean, I spent some my afternoon. I finished doing up my side jobs, and I spent my afternoon, you know, kind of just taking care of myself,
right?
Getting my list together for things that I've got to do at home that my wife has been eagerly waiting for me to do.
Right.
So my job's not done, but I got to go out and get a haircut, you know. So I go to the.
Looks good. Looks good.
Thank you, sir. I go to the old guys. Hang out over the barber shop, you know, with the circular pole that
right around. There. Is that in the heart of Crockett? Down there in the center of Crockett on Main
right
Street?
Right on Crockett Square.
Crockett Square. Yeah.
So, got to give a shout out to them guys and pumped up. Hear us out. Was sharing some. I love testimonies, but I think I love even more when I run into a human being that is really grounded in the Lord, you know, that really knows who they are.
Yeah.
They are a child of God. They don't have some great, I don't call it great, but a tragic story that they had to overcome. They've just lived an everyday, you know, for lack of better words, normal life.
Right. But with a heart for Jesus and a love for God that just radiates in their personality. It kind of reminds me of your wife. You know?
Yeah, she can get a little tough. I have to pray for her.
but you know, it's like she's one of those that, you know, she just has a heart for God. And it's great to see those people just that, you know, they, like you said, they didn't have a colorful past, but they just have a heart for God. And it's a joy to see that that is a testimony in itself. And a lot of people discredit that. They say, I really don't have a testimony. I really haven't done anything in my life. And the thing is, what they don't realize is there's people that maybe are just like them and haven't done anything, but they're under a really intense temptation at the moment and they're about to fall. And just hearing that other person speak about the joy and the goodness of God and staying true, even when things are tough. And, you know, that may be just what that other person needs, not to fall and to stay true. And to then it's not just one of them, it's two of them now. You know, it's just, that's how we continue to strengthen each other. Where if we're continually in that communication, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. I was getting my haircut. And forgive me, you have to call the show and let us know your name. I'll go back to him again. But he's the new guy there in the first chair when you walk in. And man, I got goosebumps. Just he introduced himself and he says, tell me a little bit about yourself and what brought you to our city. And I was like, well, that's going to take a minute. But in short, you know, I have to share. That's my job. That's my purpose.
Yeah.
And He asked more questions and said, what about you? I flip it a little bit. You know, I want to know about you. And he says, well, it's pretty simple. I've loved the Lord my whole life. Never had anything, haven't been shot, period. And he went through all these things and
right
that I had just talked about. And I was like, okay. Sometimes I guess, and God forgive me, I do get caught up on the tragic story of somebody because I can relate. And I know where God brought me from. I know the dirt and the mire he went in to get me and pull me out of. But those were choices made by Philip.
Right.
That I went into the mud and that. And I really find joy in running into someone, and they're probably we're surrounded by them who didn't have to do all that, who knew the Lord's love from the very, very beginning. But it's guys like him that prayed over me.
Right.
And he took the opportunity to say, "Phil, well, we've got everybody here in the barbershops. Let's talk a little bit more about your testimony." Mm. So I got to meet some people, you know, and share a little bit. And then a shout out to Miss Brown over at the bank for saving the barbershop and keeping it open. And
yes,
I hoped we will be hearing from them. She listens to the station. And it went from one positive thing on my journey to the station today.
Right.
I wasn't in a race trying to get here and get behind right. the slow guy.
Not like last time.
It was a fun drive. I made like 4 stops this time before I came here. And all of them led from, "Hey, you should go talk to this person. Hey, give this person a call." And I did. And it was neat how it all came. And then I ended up here.
It's a beautiful thing. And the way you're describing the barbershop, it reminded me of a movie. You know, it's like, you know, small town barbershop in the square, and everybody, it's the afternoon, the barber chairs are full, everyone's around drinking coffee, and usually they talk about just, you know, chit-chat.
Yeah, but, local sports or something. Yeah,
but there you are. Giving your testimony, and everyone's listening intently and giving the opportunity for as many people as were in that room, the ability to hear your testimony and allow them to draw closer to God and experience what you felt. And hopefully they can relate in their own life and go, "That didn't happen to me, but I remember when God took me through what he took me through. And I can press closer to him."
I touched on subjects from bank robbery to guys in prison in the last 2 hours here. And I needed it too, because, you know, I'm in training still. I'm gearing up. I've got a speaking engagement coming up on May 13th, and that'll be in Madisonville. And I've got some other doors opening, and we're going toward the prison direction. I'm going toward the sheriff's department. I've got 2 churches that call today, so I'm going to do some follow-up with them next week. But I've asked God to reignite what he wants me to do.
Yeah.
You know, this COVID thing was exhausting.
Yes.
In all facets, we were talking about the bills. That's probably the biggest.
Yeah.
And how the Lord still showed up. 4 days late, but he was on time.
Yep.
And that's kind of what we've been going through. And if you're out there, and well, those of you who've experienced like loss and even work in your home, I mean, come on, lumber prices are through the roof right now. So some people couldn't get things done, and they right. can't get them. They can't afford it.
Yeah.
And I was on a project that I was nearly on since January, almost 12, 15 hours a day on an average, and I'm exhausted. And this little spot today really ignited me.
Yeah, energized you. Well,
yes.
I went through that same thing this morning. I've got a great guy that delivers our propane. His name's Pat, and he's over at Consumer Propane. And he loves listening to the station, but more importantly, what he loves to do is he loves to read his Bible. And he'll read the Bible from cover to cover. And last time I spoke with him, he said he was on his 7th pass.
Oh, man.
And I just go, wow, you know what? He said, there's times where I can't go to sleep without saying, "I got to read my Bible." And I said, man, that just ignited something in my heart. I was like, Lord, you know, I read the word, but I want that passion. I want that desire that, you know, to just say, wait, I got to open up the Bible right now and I got to read it. And so I've been doing that and hitting, you know, 4 chapters a day. And
wow, that's
it just, it's been fun, because I don't know how many times I've read Genesis, yet I'm seeing things just jumping off the page that are I haven't seen before. Just amazing things. And it's just, I don't know, it's just eye-opening. But what it does is it's cultivating my heart, just like with you, saying, Lord, we know that there's something major coming. I think everybody can feel that. And over this last year, God was saying, you need to preach the word, the simple gospel. None of this, doctrinal, this denomination or that denomination. Just preach the simple word, the simple truth of my salvation. And so that's what we've been doing, and uniting everybody together under that simple gospel. And now it's like we're preparing to actually go out and do this tour and go out and to unite all of these people. And we don't know what that has in store for.
No.
It's an amazing thing that God's kind of putting this vision in your head and mine and several other people. And they just feel God saying, I need to be a part of this. We don't know what this is yet, but we're supposed to be a part of this. And I love when God works that way. I love when people are obedient that way, because then when it happens and when things get revealed, mm-hmm. everybody on that team goes, that was God.
Yes. I like that. That was God. I want to touch on something that you said a few seconds ago, how when you're reading scripture and it's fun, we forget that a lot, I believe. Most of the time when we got to pick up scripture or we've got to look for something, it's under duress or, something tragic's happening or we're just hurt and we're beat up. But to sit down and read the Bible and find a story or a testimony and have it be fun to where you're like, man, you know what? I was going to sit down and eat dinner, but I'm going to keep going here. I'm going to go to bed. Nah, I'm going to keep reading this because I want to see what happens next.
Yeah.
And when it's new and fresh like that, and I think that's important, even to you guys out there, I want to say it, especially to you guys incarcerated. It's very tough to get up in the morning and make it fresh when you got to look at the same thing and really look in the mirror and know why you're there. And when you come to the realization, for the most part, I'm not speaking for all of you guys, but hey, that you become accountable and you say, okay, Lord, I know I put me here. Nobody put me here but me. So now make a way for me. If I'm supposed to stay here for a certain amount of time, help me endure it and learn and feel your love. If I'm to get out early, Lord, help me not to come back quickly or at all. Just, start using this time to experience and know God's love and kindness and know his joy. It's not all tragic. And for some of you guys in there, you're in a good spot right now because outside is very tragic and ruthless. And then start to put your game plan together. What am I going to do when I get out? I was talking to Pastor Jeb Dotson today, and it was really a wonderful experience to sit with him, and we were kind of bouncing things back and forth. He's on one side praying for these guys. He just finished praying for some guys. He was coming out, and I was talking to Judge Clyde Black, one of our guests we had had.
Where did you meet him? At the
courthouse.
Courthouse.
Yeah, I was choosing between Dairy Queen and the courthouse, and I normally would do Dairy Queen, but then I looked at my stomach and I said, I've got to go sit by the Judge Clyde Black for a second. So one of my stops.
Yes.
So
anyway, Pastor Jeb was there. He was praying for some people that were in prison there.
Yeah.
In the jail.
Just listening to him and hearing, most of all, I was watching his expressions and the way he talks. I'm going to pick on Jeb for a little bit because I think he's got AD. He's really quick to talk and get on to the next thing. And he's gone.
Yeah.
And he took a moment. And I was listening. I could see the expressions, and I could see his heart is longing for a type of ministry to go in maybe someday and do something real and live and get the inmates involved, And I pray a miracle over that happens, because it would definitely be a game changer to pull that off.
Yeah.
But to know the sincerity and see where his heart to even think that,
yeah.
His heart is at. Him not being an inmate, him not, yeah. I don't know if he's ever been in prison, incarcerated.
So. No, the thing about that is, I think where Pastor Jeb's heart and my heart have been turned to the prison, because it wasn't on our radar. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I started this radio station and realized that how many prisons that we actually cover and started getting those letters back. When we started doing Reverend Marshall's show and the gospel show, so many thankful letters came from the
prison. He gets inundated, does he?
Oh, all the time, all the time. And we just out of that, we just said, you know, there's a hunger there, and we're just grateful that we get to serve these people, these inmates, because there's times where we've been very down, you know, because of the attacks of, you know, the station being off the air or something. And we'll get a letter from one of the prisoners or several prisoners out of the blue, just encouraging us, saying, stay the course. God has
these
something
guys are
special
in prison.
For you. They're in prison and they're giving us blessing. Oh. And, you know, and that's the joy. And so I'd never actually been into that prisons before then, until then. So,
well, hang out with me a little bit. We'll see if we can figure something out for you.
There you go. Well, we're going to get into Philip's book in this next segment right after the break, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to From the Bullet to the Bible. The studio lines are now open. You can text your questions to 936-337-5700. That's 936-337-5700.
Come and get it. Davy Crockett's Grill is now serving breakfast. Come sink your teeth into a mouth-watering chicken fried steak, two eggs, hash browns, and toast for only $7.75. Or if you're hankering for hotcakes, get two pancakes, two eggs, and your choice of bacon, ham, or sausage for only $6.75. Want some biscuits and gravy? Well, we got that too. Davy Crockett's Grill is located on the corner of Loop 304 and Highway 7 in the city of Crockett. With our new breakfast menu served Wednesday through Saturday from 7 a.m. till 10:30 a.m. Be sure to like us on Facebook to get our latest updates and more amazing deals. Order ahead by calling 936-243-6005. That's 936-243-6005. Davy Crockett's Grill. Comfort you can taste.
104.3 Joy FM. Feel the joy.
You're listening to From the Bullet to the Bible. Now, here's your host, Tim Lowry.
Well, welcome back. Thanks for joining us this Wednesday afternoon. Hey, if you have any questions for Philip, you can text him at 936-337-5700. That's 936-337-5700. Or you can write to us at From the Bullet to the Bible, P.O. Box 387, Crockett, Texas 75835. And we want to give a shout out to all those people listening around the country and around the world and here in Houston County and our surrounding areas. We're just grateful that you guys are taking the time to get to hear Philip read his book. And I know you guys are waiting for that, so we're going to get into that in this segment right here.
And do you want to say anything to Big Joe, who's listening out there in Conroe somewhere?
Big Joe, we'll give you a...
There you are. There you go, Joe.
Woo-hoo!
I love that guy.
If you've never been to Joe's restaurant, Italian restaurant in Conroe, it is amazing. I had never been there.
He
let me know that. I remember the first time I met him, I was like, you know, I've never eaten here before. And I said, but it's really good. And he's like, don't try to suck up. I was like, no, it's really good.
We went across the street or something.
Yeah, said,
I've been here 100 times, but I've never been there. Give me your sandwich back.
Give me your sandwich back. Oh, but it is really, really good, authentic food, and great that I finally got to discover that. And the amazing guy that Joe is, you know, he has fed almost 60,000 first responders since COVID started.
And he's about ready to kick another big one off here pretty soon. Busy guy, man. Him and his brother Nikki, very, very busy, and the whole crew there.
Well, they do it all for free, and I'm just so grateful that you guys are doing that for our community and for the people that are struggling because of these financial situations. It's people like you that keep our community together, keep our hearts and hopes up, and we're just grateful for you. So we're going to give you another shout-out. Thank you. Woo-hoo. We're grateful for that. 60,000 meals and counting. Keep it up, Joe. All right, so let's get into the book. So we are now in the chapter, which is
the Denver Mob.
We're on page 131, and we're picking it up. This is the part two of that chapter. And can you set up a little bit beforehand of what...
This is when I had been in some trouble back in Dallas, and I had been bouncing back and forth between Dallas and Denver. And I had come back into Denver, and I've decided to, you know, just keep pursuing the dirty stuff, the criminal activities to earn a living. I'm still living two or three lives. I mean, my family doesn't have a clue what I'm doing and who I'm talking to.
And what age are you at this point? 19, 20?
I'm 21. 21 years old. And I, in the previous reading that we've had, I had just took my blood oath. I have been accepted. I've been welcomed in by John Giovanni and Andre Chauncey Smaldone.
And that happened in Denver.
Happened in Denver.
Because in Dallas.
Gaetano's restaurant.
Because in Dallas, you got kicked out of Dallas because you got mixed up with, you beat up the wrong guy. Didn't know he was part of this other family.
Yeah. And that's gang life, you know, on the streets. You mess with the wrong person, or he belongs to a certain group. You hear about it and you'll feel it. There's repercussions for attacking other.
Well, and do you think that you weren't taken out at that moment because of the relationship that you had with John Giovanni? Do you think that was a factor, or because he just said you got to get out of there? Or
I was asked to leave, and I decided to stick around. Nobody tells me what to do,
right?
And I still didn't know what mafia was. I didn't know. I didn't know how grand and how big. I mean, it is. It's really a dangerous, tough, deep organization.
Right. Their hands are in everything. Yeah.
Number one organized criminal group in the world. It's they infiltrate anything from business to schools to, I mean, they can change your grades in school. They can.
Yeah.
There's so much to them, and how grand and how big they really were, I didn't know. I'm a street guy.
Right.
And man, the devil was waiting with open arms. He saw me, and he knew my street sense. He knew my street wise, and he took that. He cultivated it. And they had a certain use for me, and I would never rise above the ranks of an enforcer. I would always have been used to do the dirt.
Right.
And they made it seem so loving and warm and special, and I don't know what you call this term when I say you're going to be one of the greatest criminals around underneath us. You're going to get protection. Life's going to be good.
Right, right.
None of that's good. No. It doesn't end up good. And I'm fighting with death here. And I took a blood oath, you know, and I sold my soul. I agreed to work and report to a family solely. There were laws that were read to me. One of them was the code of silence. The final was the omerta, that you wouldn't be working with police or anybody outside that family. Never discuss. I mean, if I got a carjacking to do, it's not discussed outside that group.
Right. and that's how you lived that double or triple life, because nobody knew what was going on. Not your family. It was complete silence.
Only the guys on the East Coast groups really took the mob to a different level as far as media wise. To know that now, what I know now, what I didn't know then, how active they were and how far they go back. I'm still learning, you know, things about the mafia. And then I also learned about there is only one mafia. You hear about Russian mafia, China mafia. No. Mafia just kind of became a loose term, so all the groups call themselves mafia.
Right.
You know, even cartel has a certain group where they call themselves the Mexican mafia. But there were just little things, you know, that's irrelevant of what I'm doing now with my life. And it's all bad. It's all organized criminal activity. The next step that I accepted was the order of things.
Right.
I would report to La Cosa Nostra first. I would report to God second, answer to God second, then my family last. And if my wife was giving birth at the time, and I was called by La Cosa Nostra, I was to leave her and at that time and immediately go to work for them. They take God and they design God. God works for the mob, not, you know.
Right. They have fashioned a god in their own hands and in their own head to say, this is what my God is, and my God works for me.
Yes, and you follow this, or that same God is going to punish you. He's going to burn. He's going to let your whole burn, your soul burn in hell.
Right.
There were so many things to that.
Well, and that was even, I think you were just saying, when you were getting that blood oath, weren't you giving? Wasn't your wife actually had just given birth to your son?
It was the oath I took was one day after my oldest son was born.
Right. So here it is. You're supposed to be there with your infant. It's supposed to be this beautiful time. You get this call and you had to immediately do, you know, fulfill those rules and go there.
Yes. I was already, and you know what? Shame on me. I already had street mentality and I was fulfilling those rules. I mean, God forgive me. I was drunk in the parking lot when my son was born at the hospital, celebrating, toasting with friends. My mother-in-law then had to come down and drag me up to see my son be born.
Right. It's like, hey, why don't you be a little responsible here? And
Respectful.
And respectful. And
I didn't respect nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody but me.
Yeah. It was cigars and champagne. You're celebrating. Hey, I got a kid.
But yeah.
Didn't bother to go up and even see it.
We were liquored up and I was with some other gangsters out, some street guys in the parking lot in the hospital. And, you know, that's an unfortunate reality of today as well. There's a street life out there. There are gangsters and there are thugs and there are just people that don't know Jesus out there doing that same thing right now as we speak. And, guys, the benefit of being incarcerated right now, you get to hear the other side of that. I'm not telling you something you don't know and probably haven't done already. But there is a better side and there's a better way to be.
Well, and also, you know, there's the thing about what I love about the redemption of Christ is there is no condemnation. You know, Satan is a very crafty, manipulative, lying being, and he's the father of lies. So he lies with truth. It's like really, really scary. I was going through, like I said, in the beginning of Genesis, when he says to Eve, you know, he says, did God really say that you were going to die if you ate that fruit? And everything that he said, you can go back and look in Genesis, everything that the serpent said was true. He said, if you eat that fruit, you won't surely die. He says, God knows that if you eat that fruit, you will be like him, knowing good and evil.
Knowing all things.
Both of those things were absolute truth. Absolute truth. So he deceived her with truth. What he failed to add in there was those things were true, but he didn't add in the consequences of being disobedient. That's where the death would come in. But he just said, you know, it's not a poisoned apple. You're not going to die if you just eat it right away. And God knows that you're going to get this. You're going to be more like him. And when you read it, sure enough, it says that those two things were absolutely true.
You know, that goes along the lines with the criminal life I lived. I knew there were consequences, but if I just do this one thing, they're going to take care of me and I'll get through them consequences. I'll make it through prison. I'll make it through jail. Yeah. And they'll be here for me.
But see, so my point is that there's that devil in your ear whispering these things that may sound true, that may sound like good, but take a step back before you act and say, what are the consequences? And evaluate that, because that's the only way, especially if you're trying to get back on track, on the right track, you have to be able to separate a trial from a temptation. And God doesn't tempt anybody. Only Satan tempts. God will give us trials to go through, but those are things that draw us closer to him. A temptation draws us further away. So that's what you have to look at and say, even though it sounds like it's truth, it even may be a full truth, but if it's pulling you away from God, then you've got to look deeper. You got to say, what's the consequence? What's going on? And that was the thing that I think with your life, you weren't worried about that. you got all of those things in your head, and Satan was there just going, see, look how good you do this. Look how good you do that.
I was feeding my flesh.
Yeah, you're untouchable. You no one's going to touch you.
Man, I'm glad I made it. A guy once told me after I come to know Christ, if you got a question right, it's probably wrong. Take a minute. And that rings very true. I can't find where it's wrong yet, that statement even misses. And I try to use that as much as possible in my daily walk. And, you know, I gotta say, I get tempted too. I am now talking to old gangster friends and old associates. My goal is to bring them in my direction on the same side of the fence that I'm at.
Right.
But man, I gotta tell you, sometimes I gotta put them away for a couple of weeks and not talk to them
because right.
I hear the, hey man, we did this last week and we were over here and man, the money we made, man.
Right.
Little Anthony, you gotta hear about this. And
hey, like, Tony. No, I don't.
Remember when we, I can't do that no more.
Yeah.
But these were my pals. But
these are also the guys that are saying, hey, tell me about this Jesus thing.
Yes.
You know, and they're curious and it allows you to really share your heart and the reality of it. And I think they're doing that too, to test you, to say, okay, is this really real? And that is, you called it, that's a temptation, because it's drawing you, if you would act on it, it would draw you further away from God.
Even if they're not doing it on purpose. I mean, these are pals. I've known these guys.
Yeah. And,
but still, the demons are in there playing their game. And right. If they don't know Christ, I believe, and text me if you think I'm wrong, but I believe the devil used somebody that doesn't know Christ.
Yeah.
Demons dance with them and speak out of their mouths. And they can get you angry. The people that are most angry with me in my testimony is my own family.
Wow. So, Well, we didn't get to that book right yet. We're going to get it to the next segment. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to From the Bullet to the Bible. The studio lines are now open. You can text your questions to 936-337-5700. That's 936-337-5700.
Come and get it. Davy Crockett's Grill is now serving breakfast. Come sink your teeth into a mouth-watering chicken fried steak, two eggs, hash browns, and toast for only $7.75. Or if you're hankering for hotcakes, get two pancakes, two eggs, and your choice of bacon, ham, or sausage for only $6.75. Want some biscuits and gravy? Well, we got that too. Davy Crockett's Grill is located on the corner of Loop 304 and Highway 7 in the city of Crockett. With our new breakfast menu served Wednesday through Saturday from 7 a.m. till 10:30 a.m. Be sure to like us on Facebook to get our latest updates and more amazing deals. Order ahead by calling 936-243-6005. That's 936-243-6005. Davy Crockett's Grill. Comfort you can taste. 104.3 Joy FM. Feel the joy.
You're listening to From the Bullet to the Bible. Now, here's your host, Tim Lowry.
Well, welcome back. Welcome to From the Bullet to the Bible. And now the moment you've all been waiting for. We're actually going to start reading the book. Sometimes we just get carried away here in the studio. You know, we could talk for hours, but I know you guys are tuning in to hear the book, and we want to continue that. And we just kind of wanted to get you up to speed on that because, you know, sometimes the rawness of what you're reading, Philip, is we've got to kind of get back to where you were because you're a totally different person now. It's so hard for me to look at you and go, man, I don't know that Philip. I know this Philip. I know the Philip that loves Christ and will do anything he can for the kingdom. And
amen.
Even people that he doesn't know. And, you know, so getting to see that transformation is just an amazing thing. So sometimes it is hard for you to read and go back to where you were. So I appreciate the fact that you are doing that so that the listeners can get to know where you were in your mind at that time and where you are now.
I took a big chunk out of that apple.
Okay, so we're on page 131 of his book, From the Bullet to the Bible. You can get it at 1043joyfm.com/bullet. Click on the link, and he will send you an autographed copy if you order it from there. If not, you can order it on Amazon or where any digital books are sold.
Go to our website, From the Bullet to the Bible Ministries. You can go there. 936-337-5700. 936-337-5700. 5700. Please text in, guys, if you've got some scripture that comes to mind that you'd like to throw at us, or if you have questions or you want to get involved or just need some prayer. We're happy to do that, and that's what we're here for.
All right, so let's jump in on page 131. This is, we are the Denver Mob.
I've just received my induction. I'm now part of the family. And you asked a question before, do you think that what happened, that I should have been dead, or there was something that, well, my car had blown up and I was asked to leave. I was asked to leave the entire state of Texas.
With a nice car bomb.
Yeah.
So, it wasn't a letter. It was a car bomb. Your car blew up. It's like, you need to leave. Here's why.
Knowing what I know now, it was definitely due to the power of prayer and people that were praying over me that I didn't know.
Amen.
So here we go. Page 131. The old men passed away shortly after the Young Small Dome faction was listed as the Mafia family in Denver. But to be truthful, their time was through, in organized crime anyway. They went legit with their family businesses. I made my rounds to the powers that be. I would frequent Dino's in Lakewood, Gaetano's in Denver, and Roma's in Thornton without any organized leadership. I kind of did my own thing. There wasn't a lot of action going on in Denver at the time. Chauncey took office for the Small Dome family, but was pretty much non-active. The Colombo faction with members started to make their presence felt at this time, which would only make sense due to a connection long before my time between Eugene Small Dome and Johnny Sonny Franzese. What a small world. I would later come to meet with his son, Michael Franzese, a.k.a. the Prince of the Mafia. It was during this time that the first of my two sons was born. I wasn't a good father figure, nor was I in a position to be one. But it was during this time I tried to put some normal in my life. After some counsel, I decided to get a job. Through a friend's referral, I went to work at Merrill Lynch in the mailroom. I honestly enjoyed it, and I was able to hold on to it for a minute. Still, the money wasn't enough, and I had a real problem with the corporate way of doing things. In the mailroom, I had a lot of free time, not to mention access to everything, including company vehicles, but I felt like I was losing. I really didn't have a good relationship with my son's mother, and I felt like I was living a life to try to be like other normal families. Hell, I didn't even know what that was. I love my son very much, and because of that, I did my best. At least I thought it was my best at the time. I started to build a double life. During the day, I was punching a clock at a low-paying, miserable job. At night, I took a job as a bouncer at a place called Club Peaches. It was on the corner of 38th and Wadsworth in Lakewood. It was frequented by athletes, some NBA players, and quite often by a group of Denver Broncos. Vance Johnson was one Bronco I got to know. He liked to party and show off. He had a serious drinking problem and did his share of cocaine. I had personally settled down a few times while at the club. I had personally settled him down a few times while at the club. His time was short in the early 90s, and after some law trouble with domestic stuff, he left for San Diego. This bar was owned by a few people whom I can't name. One of the owners being a local radio DJ who also had his hands in some cocaine. He was involved with a group in Denver that to this day continued to operate open and close clubs, constantly changing club names around the Denver area. In the mid-90s, I had many dealings with this guy, and they weren't always good for him when I had to go get involved. My relationship with my son's mother never improved. To shoot straight, I don't believe we ever really got along. Enough of that. Since I had free use of the mail van at Merrill Lynch. I took full advantage of it. I used it in the evening and on weekends to move merchandise and product from import areas to export areas. Import area would be anything that came in from out of town that would be sold on the streets, through shops and strip malls, the flea market, street vendors, and depending on the merchandise in the back rooms of some restaurants associates. The Merrill Lynch job lasted about 2 years. I split up with my son's mother and met my next son's mother, who worked at Merrill Lynch. We actually got along, but her family couldn't stand me. I was still leading a double life. I was running around the town of Morrison at the time. Morrison was a home base for our mob business. Both of my sons' births came before I had developed any relationship with their mothers. As a result, young parents not knowing each other and far from financially stable led to lots of arguments, lots of drinking, and no relationship. By the time I was 23, I was at the end of my relationship with my second son's mother. I had probably accumulated 50 run-ins with the law for lots of small stuff, some thefts here and there, and quite a few assaults. I had been in enough trouble that an opportunity was given to me by a judge to change directions. As part of my probation, I had to visit elementary schools and discuss youth violence with sixth graders. However, at night, I was still doing criminal activity. I enjoyed talking with the sixth graders, and my talks were having an impact on their lives. Their conversations later led to a low-budget film made for Hollywood called Just a Phase. The tension at home became so bad that I relinquished rights of my second son to his mother, and we agreed to never see each other again. I remember her mother telling her that they would tell my son that I died or something. Anyway, I felt that was best for him at the time. Sad, but true. I was fired from Merrill Lynch for threatening a manager. He was a chauvinistic pig of a man from New York. Once while in the bathroom, made a comment about a girl that I knew well. Anyway, I couldn't stand the guy at all, and I threatened to throw him out of his office window if he ever spoke that way again about any woman. He went to human resources, and I was escorted off the property. I didn't sweat it. I saw no value in trying to get even with him. I met another girl that I really liked, and we were together almost 7 years. Again, I was living separate lives with her, but she never went along with it or turned her head when she didn't quite like what she saw. Her father was a good man and a police officer. I respected him and liked him very much. He wasn't aware of any of my associations, or at least he never showed it. He knew of other officers that were on the darker side of the department, but he did not associate with them. The house I owned had been a church prior to me living in it. It was called something like Westside Chapel. Anyway, I kept it as a church for as far as the name goes. The girl was able to get me to go to church. It couldn't hurt, so I started to attend with her and her mother. This lasted for about a year. She was a very beautiful girl, and I had a good family. But for that short time, this was the closest to family that I was able to provide for my oldest son. I haven't mentioned the concrete work in my younger years, but I had work on occasion with my Uncle Mike. I was a laborer for him, and boy, it was the hardest work I had ever done. My Uncle Mike was my favorite uncle. There wasn't a lot of mob action going on, and I was trying real hard to live a normal life. I decided to develop a trade. For some strange reason, I chose concrete. The money was good, but the work was hard. I went to work for an outfit up in Fort Collins, Colorado. I was learning as a laborer and about ready to become a concrete finisher. Well, one thing about concrete guys is we are animals. We drink hard and we play hard. I hadn't been in a fight in a while, and maybe I was due. I was working out of town in a place named Holyoke, Colorado for a week. Forgive me, flashback. During the Holyoke's where they make corn kernels for popcorn.
Okay.
Yeah. Holyoke, like near Nebraska. Colorado for a week. During that last couple of days, I got into it with another labor. After lots of beer and some wrestling around, things got serious and wrestling turned into boxing. He was a good-sized guy and it was a great fight. We were both swinging and both bleeding. We were put up in a hotel. And I remember rushing him and trying to get him against the wall. But instead, we went through the wall and through another wall. We tore the place apart. We worked the next day, but upon my return home, I received my paycheck and was told that I had to be let go. He was fired as well, and it wasn't the fighting that got us fired. It was the damage to the hotel that the owner had to cover. My stepfather was a very good man, good to me, and especially good to my mother. I had several conversations with him one-on-one. He was aware of my associations, but let me be my own person. I respect him for that. I really respected the way he treated my mother. I respected him so much that I later changed my last name to his. He had appreciated my efforts in trying to live right. No one knows how much I wanted to pursue this other way. It was so hard to follow the rules. After some thought about what to do next, I saw something on bartending that intrigued me. I don't recall what it was, but I checked out a place called the Bartending College. It was an office building located in an office suite that had been designed to look like a bar. The owner was looking for a recruiter. I went to a group orientation, watched as he pitched his 40-hour course, which taught 150 drinks by word association, and then the students would make the drinks with real liquor bottles using colored water. I knew my liquor, and I learned the drinks easily. At the interview, the owner and I spoke, and he brought me in. It was easy to recruit because the class sold itself. It didn't take long for me to do the math. He was getting $350 a student and spending $28 to process a student. I decided that I wanted this place. I got a feel for the place and went out and did a few bartending gigs. I approached my stepdad about the idea. Next thing I know, he bought the business from the guy, and I was running it. I must say I enjoyed running my own business. And we end that chapter. That's kind of two big different sides of me there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it shows the double life that you were dealing with. At the same time, you went through several relationships and even went to church.
I was never faithful, ever. I always had a girlfriend, and I don't know if you call those marriages. They weren't under God. They weren't in front of a judge, and there was what I thought I had to do. Nothing against my dad, but, I mean, he didn't really give me a birds and the bees and proper family conversation, what we're supposed to do. We had a broken home. My mom was doing well, and I was honestly, I mean, really trying to figure out. I remember back then, if I could make it in as punching a clock, as a functional person of society. And there was still something inside of me, Tim. I recall it now. I love to fight. I didn't.
You almost felt claustrophobic in a real job.
Right there. Claustrophobic in a real caring home.
It's like something wasn't right. You couldn't put your finger on it. Well, we'll talk about that when we come back on the break. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Philip Hall and From the Bullet to the Bible. Don't go away.
You're listening to From the Bullet to the Bible. The studio lines are now open. You can text your questions to 936-337-5700. That's 936-337-5700.
Come and get it. Davy Crockett's Grill is now serving breakfast. Come sink your teeth into a mouth-watering chicken fried steak, two eggs, hash browns, and toast for only $7.75. Or if you're hankering for hotcakes, get two pancakes, two eggs, and your choice of bacon, ham, or sausage for only $6.75. Want some biscuits and gravy?
Well, we got that too. Davy Crockett's Grill is located on the corner of Loop 304 and Highway 7 in the city of Crockett. With our new breakfast menu served Wednesday through Saturday from 7 a.m. till 10:30 a.m. Be sure to like us on Facebook to get our latest updates and more amazing deals. Order ahead by calling 936-243-6005. That's 936-243-6005. Davy Crockett's Grill. Comfort you can taste.
Feel the joy.
You're listening to From the Bullet to the Bible. Now, here's your host, Tim Lowry.
Well, welcome back. We are just sharing stories off air about some of the things that you were thinking about. They're not in the book, but just flashbacks of different things that happened during that time. And you were talking about some of the things that you did at Merrill Lynch, and that there you were at this job that anybody who is trying to make a career, starting out in the mailroom is a great place to start, and then you work yourself up and you can get into the paralegal department, you can get into the banking department, you can get into a lot of stuff. And you said that you actually got from the mailroom into some of the paralegal stuff, but ultimately you just, what happened?
It wasn't really even that the my manager was a jerk. That wasn't it.
Right. That was your excuse out.
I was looking for a reason, and I did. I threatened him. He had never been threatened. Like, this is a suit-wearing atmosphere.
Right. Wasn't thugs.
I don't know if people know what Merrill Lynch is, but I didn't know what Merrill Lynch is. I had a friend who became a sheriff afterwards who just got me the job because he went to school for it.
Right.
And he was a good friend, and he was trying to see better in my life. He had seen us grow up, and he said this would be a great start. And I was illiterate, Tim. I couldn't grasp things. I didn't do well in school, and I guess had I put the tools that I should have learned in school into that job, who knows where I could be.
Right.
I played on the Merrill Lynch golf team, and I used to get along with, his name was Ed Sidlowski. He was the resident president out of New York, and he would come down, and everybody would say, okay, put your ties on, get him.
Right.
The president's in the building.
Right, right, right.
And I was like, whatever. And my little brother had been working there as well, and we would always have this handshake that people was like, what is that?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Pop the fist, do the snap the fingers, flip around. I'd catch you later, bro. And everybody there was so, I guess, proper.
Right.
And we weren't. Well, when Big Boss came in one day, and my boss was really over me. He's like, don't do that. Your brother's coming. Man, I don't answer nobody. And me and my brother did that handshake in front of him. And he goes, let me see that again. What is that? So we showed him. I said, man, you big cheese, big honcho, man. I'll show you how to do this. This is how you got it. I mean, dude, give me your tie. Loosen that up, man. You're too tight when you come in here.
Right.
He goes, is that what it is? And I remember one time going to by his office, and he said, hey, Mr. Sains at the time was my last name. Mr. Sains, come on in here. And my boss had reprimanded me. Man, you're going to get fired. I'm going to hear about this, your conduct.
Right.
And he said, you have that attitude all around here? I said, yeah, man, this is me. Why, is something wrong? You want to fire me? Don't get mad at my boss, man. He wasn't his fault. But he don't tell me what to do. He goes, no, he doesn't, huh? And I said, no, he don't. Nobody does. And we sat. He goes, grab a seat. So we talked, and I found out that at one time he was a drummer for the Four Seasons.
Wow.
Yeah, and every time we'd go by his office or something, he'd be, Phil, what's up, man? Yo. I'd say, yo, you. And we'd go over and I'd do handshake.
The handshake and yeah, with the president of Merrill Lynch. Nice.
And he invited me to some dinners. I went to his house, gave me a briefcase with a Merrill Lynch,
the emblem on it. Yeah, the big.
Yeah, it was made of brass, and it was just cool stuff, and people were like, how are you getting to hang out with him? Man, he's just another cat like me, and like you too. But I couldn't stand what people would do to suck up to get to or even meet him.
Right, right.
Then they didn't even like me more when they couldn't figure out how I got asked to play. He asked if you ever played golf, and I said, I've swung some clubs, and he said, no, have you played golf, though? And I said, no, I've swung some clubs. And so we went out and practiced one time, and I was okay. I was horrible.
You weren't Tiger Woods, but you were.
No, I literally, I did horrible. And so he let me be on his team for some strange reason. I got to fill in when they were absent. I probably cussed more. I would pound the ground with my golf club when I couldn't hit the ball right and it would shank or whatever. And he just would, I think I was there for his entertainment. Mm. And
well, you know, you said a very valid point, and we only have a little bit of time before the show is over, but the fact that you felt claustrophobic in that environment, that in when things were going right, because you weren't used to it, you need to be in control. And that's something that when you get, God's got to take that from you, that ability to just want to pick a fight, want to get into that stuff. And you could have the best things happening around you and still not see that and fall back on that because you still haven't let that go. You haven't let God do that. And it wasn't until after you came to Christ and you still had some time where you had to let that go. But once you let that go, your life changed and put you on a whole different path. What can you tell people in the next, we only have about a minute, but what could you tell people that are struggling with that right now?
Stay in prayer. Never give up, because that devil's not going to quit. I didn't believe the devil existed until I came to know Christ. And I still have to fight. Every day, I've got to put on my armor and I've got to ask for guidance. There are times when people want to give me money and I think they're asking me for money. And I fight that. And looking for the, well, what is it you say I did? Even though I just did a job for them. And they're saying, well, wait a minute, don't get so mad. I want to give you more.
Right.
Oh, I thought you were complaining about my work. I'm always sometimes ready for the challenge and the fight. And I got to remember, there's no scales. I'm on God's tape measure here. Mm. So remember that, guys. And when you feel that little urge or something feels agitating to you, it could be any little thing. Save yourself some pain. Get in prayer. Ask the Lord to take care of it. Love you guys.
Amen. Well, we appreciate you guys. We can't wait to see you and talk to you guys next week.
This Saturday. Saturday.
You've been listening to From the Bullet to the Bible with Philip Hall and Tim Lowry. This program is a ministry of From the Bullet to the Bible Ministries. We would love to hear from you. You can mail your questions and comments to From the Bullet to the Bible, P.O. Box 387, Crockett, Texas, 75835. That's From the Bullet to the Bible, P.O. Box 387, Crockett, Texas, 75835.